Shayna, my dear.
Christopher.
Since it's just the two of us, I wanted to let you in on some bad news about our corporate sponsor, the Dodge Theocrat pickup truck.
Oh, no. Chris, what happened to the Dodge Theocrat?
There's a recall notice for the onboard navigation system. It seems that the Theocrat onboard navigation system is having a malfunction.
I'm shocked. And what is the nature of said malfunction?
Well, you know, I've heard this now. I don't. My Theocrat is working fine. But,
is it?
Yeah. But I've heard, I've heard that if you program the navigation system, you know, you punch in your destination and then you punch in start. Siri says, in 2 miles, take the next exit and go to hell.
Okay.
Welcome to What in God's Name. She is Shayna Appel.
And he is Christopher Owen.
We are on a mission to reframe public conversations using the lenses of theology and philosophy.
Basically, to reframe and to some extent also reclaim the conversation, to pull it out of the realm of politics and economics, which seems to color so much of the conversation happening in our public square today, but which does little to help us get to the place of human flourishing.
We need your help. Help us by subscribing.
We need so much help. It's so true.
Help us by subscribing to What in God's Name wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us one of those beautiful little reviews. We also need to pay our associate producer, Brandon Edwards. So send us a tip on Venmo or on PayPal. Go ahead and do that. Just do that right now. Help us out that way. And of course, you can be a donor to What in God's Name through our Patreon page. We have a spinny wheel. It's part of the way we start our show. It is, I haven't done a little description in a while, Shayna, so please indulge.
Okay.
Our spinny wheel is a bicycle wheel mounted on a piece of plywood. It has a sprinkler head that acts as a pointer. The pointer is duct taped to the bicycle wheel. We spin it. It ends up on one of 16 different core values or key ideas of What in God's Name. Shayna and I then do a riff on that randomly selected little core idea or key value. Core value or key idea.
And I am convinced that Chris feels the need to describe said spinny wheel as often as he gets a chance because he is that proud of his own swamp Yankee-ness. Now, Christopher, I don't remember whose turn it is to spin. I think it might be yours. The other thing about the spinny wheel is that it always seems to mysteriously land right where we need it to for the show at hand. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes.
The spinny wheel has landed on Be Curious, which is just Be Curious. It's the first of our core values.
Be curious, go deep, and shine light.
You love to talk about holy curiosity.
I love talking about a holy curiosity. And again, the spinny wheel has done it in a show where today we will be talking about the place of religion in the public square. It is so necessary, really, for any dialogue to take place, any healthy dialogue. And isn't this just what Peter Admirand was saying last week, that for any healthy dialogue to take place across ideologies or, you know, across religious boundaries, that we have to approach it with an open heart and an open mind and a sense of honestly wanting to know where the other is at. We also have to be willing to be transformed in the process of that conversation. Not that our perspective will change necessarily, but, you know, once you allow another's perspective inside, you carry that perspective with you. You will always know that perspective, right? So you are not who you were before you had that perspective loaded in.
As you were speaking, I'm reminded of curiosity as a characteristic of a citizen. Mm. Like if we are going to be if we are going to continue to be a people who have a claim to being self-governing, then curiosity has to be part of our public deliberations. Otherwise, it's the zero sum. I'm not going to listen to you. Let me ram my perspective down your throat, and whoever has power gets to win. And that, over the long term, will not serve a self-governing people.
No, it doesn't. It's anti-democratic for sure. And God, talk about something that is an absolute annihilator of human flourishing, right? Yeah.
Let's go today. Shana, you...
Let's get on
Can you lead us off?
I can lead us off. So as I mentioned, today's show is about the role of religion in the public square. There is a lot of conversation out there. I was able to find a lot of material out there, both speaking to whether or not it's appropriate for religion to be present in the public square at all, and then also what is the nature of the public square. Where is the public square these days? And so that was interesting. And was it Peter who said the public square is any place two people come together, two or more people come together?
Yeah, that was one of the definitions we explored last week.
I love that definition, again, because that is where so many of these conversations happen, right? Around dinner tables, around holiday tables with families that wind up in these, you know, blowouts and people leaving and not talking to one another again, because we cannot tolerate different perspectives. As regards the role of religion in the public square, at least in the articles I was reading, and most of them were tapping religious professionals to reflect on that. So not surprisingly, the vast majority of them did think that religion had a place in the public square. And many, certainly from Judeo-Christian traditions, went back to origin stories, right? Early stories in their holy readings to talk about how their religions were brought forth, really were given birth in the public square. I mean, we can talk about the Hebrew scriptures, which some people know as the Old Testament, oral tradition. The same thing by the time we get to the Christian scriptures or the so-called New Testament, that they were initially, all of this was an oral tradition being passed down because the vast majority of people couldn't read, A, and B, there really weren't enough texts, there wasn't enough papyrus to go around. So these all come out of oral traditions, storytelling traditions, and where are these stories being told in the public square? I did think it was interesting because I did read a couple of Muslim religious leaders who did not feel that religion had a place in a pluralistic society. And I couldn't help but wonder if that wasn't the voice of a minority, at least here in America, or how being the minority voice in the American religious landscape influenced that perspective.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. And, you know, that division between public and private and dividing our social life into all these different discrete spheres, our economic life, our political life, our religious life. Think of the modern newspaper divided into all of these different spheres of inquiry or spheres of human activity. That's a really modern division. And this sense of religion being private is a Western invention. This is new. It's really new to and very different from the experience of religion in other cultures. So what we find is that in this modern secular society of America today, there's a sense by a lot of people who would, by the way, disagree about a bunch of different things about morality, but who sense the missing piece of our public life being moral consideration. Economics is amoral. Just go get and acquire. Politics has become amoral. Just go get power and hold on to it. And so our project is about, in one sense, remoralizing the public square in a plural setting, which is tricky.
It is tricky. And I think if you, well, the two things. One, speak to the atheists about the role of religion in the public square, and they will say, we're already being pushed to the margins. One cannot give testimony in a courtroom without swearing to God to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Our dollar bills are imprinted with the words, "In God we trust." So the atheists already feel under pressure and pushed to the margins by what's taking place in the public square. Their perspective is also greatly needed. But I would say the vast majority of people who will heartily, vociferously, energetically object to the presence of religion in the public square are those who are looking at sort of the worst of religion in the public square. And we happen to be in one of those moments right now. And of course, Chris, I'm referring to the release of the memo from the Supreme Court that is hearkening their intention to do away with Roe v. Wade and a woman's right to choose. And we've done an entire show on this in the past. But let me just reiterate a few points, which is that my theory, and I don't think I'm alone with this, my theory is that progressive Protestantism, progressive Christianity as a whole, but specifically progressive Protestantism, went underground when the anti-abortionists came forward. They were so strident. The way they used their religion like a chain and just swung it indiscriminately and without thinking and without caring for those who did not think like they did was so distasteful, seemed to run contrary to everything progressive Christians understood about the social, you know, the social gospel era, which is when this is all happening, right? Protestant Christians are engaged in all sorts of good work at hospitals and orphanages and working on behalf of the homeless and the impoverished. And during that time, the morality of Protestantism is very present in the public square. Enter the anti-abortionists, and I think people were so horrified, and they didn't want to be openly religious because they didn't want to be equated with that shrill and harsh presentation. So they just got quiet and went away. And now, here we are all these years later, 50 plus years later, and we're back in the depths of Roe v. Wade and waiting to see whether the Supreme Court's going to overturn it. Largely based on the religious thinking principles of not even the majority of Americans, right? Because the recent polls indicate that something in the area of 67% of Americans support a woman's right to choose. Obviously, the issue goes well beyond abortion because it really stands to throw women in particular, couples to some extent, but women in particular, back to the dark ages. If women cannot make choices about their own bodies, if women cannot choose when to have children, if women who cannot afford to have children are forced to have them and forced to raise them, they cannot reach their potential. And when women do not reach their potential, societies don't reach their potential either. So we're seeing the worst right now of religion in the public square, and I'm going to shut up and give you an opportunity to respond to that.
So your telling of the recent history of the abortion question in public conversation, I think, is largely correct in terms of your identifying a certain religious voice with the what is called pro-life perspective. And
I hate that term.
Okay.
They are anti-abortion because for them to be called pro-life suggests that we are not.
Yeah, right. No, there's a whole rhetorical
yes,
game going on in terms of who's called what. So thank you for lifting that up into consciousness, because The words are important. The positive piece of that, and I'm curious if you agree, is the desire to say there is a moral dimension to this question. I think when it gets politicized, then we lose the ability to have the moral conversation. Like, I don't know where there's a serious dialogue about the morality. And I think there are some who would say it's not even a moral question. I'm not. Do you agree with that? I'm not sure. I mean, I've never. It's all about rights.
Well, from
that perspective,
the politicization of the question throws it into a binary. Either you are for abortion or you are against it, and that leaves very little room. It leaves no room for those of us like myself who are in the middle. I abhor the notion of abortions. I think every abortion is a tragedy, and knowing a number of women who have been through them, I don't think they'd disagree with me. It is horrific. It is an excruciating decision that a woman makes for, you know, any number of reasons, but it is never easy. I abhor abortions. But I don't think it's the government's place to step in and make that decision for a woman. And here's my other argument is because a lot of these people in the public square who are so shrilly, you know, like the most shrill and out there, you know, who are anti-abortion are also anti-contraception. So, you know, WTF, what whiskey tango foxtrot, as we say. I mean, if you're against abortion and you hate the idea of abortion, why would you not want to do everything possible to ensure that there are fewer abortions? It is a religious issue for them, and it is an effort on the part of some people who are anti-abortion to shove their religion down our throats and up our asses. And that, I'm sorry, I reject that out of hand.
Yeah, and I think what you've identified is really a crux. I mean, there's more than one crux to this particular question. And that is, you're pointing to the clumsiness of the law. That is, it's a blunt instrument, and the art of making good law is to, at least in a question like this, have it be general enough so that it doesn't become a club, like a physical club, to beat people over the head. And so, to put it positively, the law needs to be It needs to leave space for the moral conversation. It can't short-circuit the moral conversation.
Correct.
The key is having the moral conversation.
But, boy, what a Pandora's box. Can you imagine opening that bad boy up? Because now we have to deal realistically with, you know, the sanctity of life, the sacredness of all life. Oh, my God. We can't put people to death anymore. There goes the death penalty. Oh, my God. We would have to acknowledge that a corporation is not a person and doesn't have the same rights as a person does, and that a corporation that is guilty of killing a bunch of people must be ended. I mean, if we're going to seriously, in this country, if we're seriously going to get into that moral argument, it would change the landscape of all sorts of things, but blessedly, too, it would have to raise up the citizenry to something more than consumers. You know, that human life, all human life, would have to be acknowledged as sacred, regardless of its color, regardless of whether it is housed or unhoused, regardless of whether it is, you know, obese or suffering from food insecurity, regardless of whether it is gay, straight, trans, bi, regardless of its faith or lack thereof. Like, that could be a seriously pivotal moment if we could, you know, get into that conversation.
That is so right. So, you know, I This is a preface to an observation, just to give some context. Because my spiritual journey went through a Jesuit-run Roman Catholic university, and there I actually found religion instead of lost it in college, I am always paying attention to certain conversations in the Catholic Church. And which is to say, when you were talking about this, if we get to the moral question and really raise it and work it through, it echoes something happening in current Roman Catholic public forums, which is this sense of the seamless garment pro-life position, which is to say that because the Catholic Church is rent also by this, by some who are focused solely on abortion as the pro-life issue. And then there are other Catholics making the same argument you just made, and this is the connection, that there's a seamless garment of pro-life perspectives. Not that we'll all agree totally on all of them, but Catholic social teaching from this point of view, the people who are advocating this, who are deeply grounded in their theological perspective on it, are saying exactly the same thing you're saying, that a seamless garment pro-life position includes ecological flourishing. It includes supporting families and communities in various ways with various policies.
And so here you have it, right here on What in God's Name, the moment when the genderqueer Unitarian Universalist aligns up with the Catholic Church. Don't tell me there is no room for us to come together if we can engage in some dialogue. But, you know, again, everybody's got to realize that you're not going to get 100% of what you want. But if abortion is that horrible for you, then let's work together to limit the number of them. Let's work to limit the necessity for them. And how many abortions become necessary secondary to rape or incest? Let's just talk about those two things. You know, are any in the anti-abortion side talking about contraception and how to get that out there and how to have conversations about our bodies? Because there's so much BS and bad theology wrapped up in some of this evangelical, you know, the worst of the evangelical screamers in the public square that just wanted all their, the quasi-theocrats who want it all their way, that it throws the conversation in, again, into this, like the it's centrifuged, right? You know, that religion in that context becomes the centrifuge, which drives whatever is in the test tube to one of two ends, but leaves absolutely no room in the middle.
Yeah, and the way politics is currently practiced in the United States, there is no room for that dialogue. That dialogue will not happen. And this is why I think, if I imagine like what could be or what possibilities there are or what the church, what faith communities, or even no unfaith communities, but people who are engaged with moral questions, this is our calling, is to be the places where these dialogues can happen, harking back to Peter Admirand from last week's conversation. Because the politics isn't going to change until the politicians have to pay a price for being a place where conversations don't happen, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's where I come for now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
shall we leave it there?
I think the spinny wheel had it from the start. Stay curious.
Be curious. Yep. Absolutely. And then
go deep.
Go deep. And then
shine light.
Our show today is brought to you by our generous donors on Patreon. Please help us out. We do need to pay our associate producer. Become a supporter on Patreon. You can sign up for our newsletter on our website, whatingods.com, which is Shana,
WHATINGODS.
Good to be with you today.
Always great to be with you, Christopher.